Good morning and welcome to Sunday View. It is Sunday morning, November 17th, 2019. Hope you're having a good weekend. It's a wet and miserable morning across Manchester. I'm in Salford, of course. Do get in touch with me between now and the end of the programme on Twitter. I'm sure you'll have plenty to say, if you saw it, that is, about the BBC Two Newsnight special last night with Prince Andrew. Talking about that this morning, for the majority of the next hour or thereabouts. Love to get your thoughts on it, so do tweet me with them. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Good form I am. I'm having a pretty decent weekend. Can't fault it, so let's just get on with the programme. Let's do it. At Richie Allen Show again. I do want to hear from you today.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, going to focus on that interview last night. It's been described as extraordinary by the UK media today. The press and the broadcast media are full of it this morning. I've been observing the reaction with great interest. We'll talk about that shortly. And there's a little bit of election stuff around, but we won't dwell too much on that today. It is interesting to note that most of those being interviewed about the election this morning were completely reluctant to give any comment about Prince Andrew. Well, I think you and I've got plenty to say about it. And if you didn't catch it last night, I've got some choice cuts for you to hear, and we will listen to them and evaluate them or analyse them. Eh? How about that? Sunday View, live on multiple platforms with me, Richie Allen. Always great to be with you. Good morning to Shona in South Africa. Good morning, Shona. The first one I saw there. Hi to Charlie as well. Hi to Phil. How you doing, Phil? And to Mwinga. How you doing, Mwinga? And to Charisse as well. I've known Charisse a long time. Charisse is interesting. We must get Charisse on the Richie Allen radio show really soon. She was on LBC radio the other day talking about vaccines and wasn't treated very well. Well, that's why the Richie Allen Show exists. Because even if we disagree, and by the way, I don't disagree with Charisse, but even if we find a disagreement with people, we always give them plenty of time to say their piece, don't we? Yeah. Are you virtue signalling, you big baldy bastard? No, I'm not. It's just why the programme exists. Hi to Ash Black and to Ronan Morley. How you doing, Ronan? How you doing? I say I'm having a good weekend. Salford were beaten 3-2 by Swindon Town yesterday afternoon at the Peninsula Stadium. It's a good game of football now. Good game of football, but 'twas a defeat nonetheless. I was there as a season ticket holder. Hi to Mr. Sin. How you doing, Mr. Sin? And hi to Marie McVrian. How you doing, Marie? Conasati Diagwit, Augusto Falcha Road, Gideon Glore. Yes. Right, Paul Burchill as well. How you doing, Paul? And to Justin and to everybody else who's tweeting about the interview. I will read your comments on the interview, by the way. I will. Of course I will, as we go along. Before we hear some of the interview with Emily Maitlis, who is one of three women who present Newsnight these days. She got the gig and went to Buckingham Palace to interview Prince Andrew. Before we hear a bit of it, let me read you the front page headlines on the UK's newspapers. Let's just run through them quickly. The Observer headline, I didn't have sex with teen. I was at home after pizza party. Prince. Okay, the Mail on Sunday, not one single word of remorse is the Mail, which says in the nearly hour-long interview, he didn't express any remorse for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. The Sunday Mirror, no sweat and no regret. We'll come to that. It was one of several bizarre answers given by the man in the interview. Sunday Express, Prince Andrew denies sex with teen. Couldn't have been him. He was unable to sweat. And the Sunday Express also has an election-themed headline as well. Millions face threat to their pension. is the headline on The Express. The Sunday Telegraph, big picture of Prince Andrew looking a bit mournful. But also the headline is Every Tory Candidate Signs Brexit Deal Pledge. The Sunday Telegraph alleges this morning that all 650 Conservative Party candidates, or is it 651? Can't remember. 651 maybe. They've all agreed as part of their contract with the Tory party, if they get elected, they will support Boris Johnson's deal. And the Daily Star and the Sunday People, both tabloids ignoring, on the front page anyway, the Andrew story. The Star on Sunday going with a Christmas flood warning that the weather over Christmas will be very bad and we will see more flooding. And the Sunday People has a difficult story, a very personal story about a woman who was raped by a man, a foreign national, who had previously been imprisoned in his own country for rape. Left his own country for rape, came over here, and he raped a British woman. And she's asking in the Sunday People, how the bloody hell does that happen? The Sunday Times headline, Army covered up torture and child murder. The SAS and the Black Watch accused of war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. That is a very serious story, and I have no doubt we'll be talking about that in the next couple of Richie Allen radio shows. But on the front page of the Sunday Times, Duke, I didn't have sex, I have a pizza alibi. Oh, the Podesta emails. Oh, Pizzagate is doing the rounds of Twitter this morning. And of course, hashtag Prince Andrew, hashtag Duke of York, hashtag Sweat, and all the rest of it is trending on Twitter this morning. 7 minutes it is past the hour. What have the pundits made of it? What have the pundits made of Prince Andrew's interview? Well, they can be summed up by this man, Sven Hughes. Sven is a strategic communications advisor, and I've picked out his comment because it sums up pretty much the gamut of comments on broadcast media today. Communications advisor Sven Hughes on the interview last night.
No, absolutely not. He's either very stupid or very arrogant or very guilty. I mean, there's only one of three options in this. I have the distinct feeling from hearing from fairly reliable sources that he didn't listen to his advisors and went ahead on his own behalf to do this interview. Every single one of the questions he was setting out to answer, he's asked four or five other questions off the back of it. And his supposed alibis that get him out of trouble are really paper thin. And really, I think it's been a complete car crash of an interview.
Yeah. That's pretty much what people are saying this morning. Most political men and women, those would-be MPs and current MPs, sitting MPs, absolutely reluctant to give a comment on it this morning, which is fairly revealing. Brandon Lewis of the Tories, Jonathan Ashworth of the Labour Party on Sky News would not be drawn on the interview and wouldn't offer any comment whatsoever. Hi to Molly Pitcher. How you doing, Molly? Good morning. Good morning to Desmond Knox. Good morning to Joe Public. Good morning to Dean Smith. How you doing, Dean? Dean read a poem out on the phone-in show the other day. I have received it, Dean. Thank you. I got it this morning, and I'm going to arrange to have it put on the Facebook page, pinned to the top. And when the new website is ready to go, we'll have it pinned on the website as well. Because it's going to be a topical poem for many a month to come, of course, with the climate change agenda and all of that. Okay, then, let's hear some of this interview between Newsnight's Emily Maitlis last night and the Duke of York, Prince Andrew himself. Okay, got quite a few cuts here. We'll have a listen and we'll try to kind of delve deep down into, dig into what it is he is saying and what might be going on. I won't play some of the inconsequential stuff. She did ask him at the beginning how he came to know Jeffrey Epstein. That's all in the public domain. Here he is talking about the many times he visited Epstein but didn't see very much while he was there.
When I saw him either in the United States... Well, no, when I saw him in the United States or when I was staying in his houses in the United States, There was no indication, absolutely no indication. And if there was, you have to remember that at the time, I was patron of the NSPCC's Full Stop campaign, so I was close up with what was going on in those time about getting rid of abuse to children. So I knew what the things were to look for, but I never saw them.
So you would have made that connection because you stayed with him, you were a visitor, a guest on many occasions at his homes, and nothing struck you as suspicious?
Nothing.
During that whole time?
Nothing.
Deaf, dumb and blind in all the times he went to see Epstein. And this is a theme that keeps coming up, that he was there many times. But he's tried to deflect from any perceived friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. A number of times during the conversation, he tried to make the point that he wasn't a close friend of his, that his relationship was with Ghislaine Maxwell, whom he knew when she was at university. So he said there, as a patron of the National Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Children, very interesting that, I'm schooled in being able to notice these things, but I didn't see anything when I spent time in Epstein's houses and on his plane and on his island. I didn't see anything. All right, we'll come back to that, because Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, or Jufrey, there's so many ways of pronouncing that. I've not actually heard her mention her own name, but I think it's Virginia Roberts Jufrey, I think. Jufrey, probably the closest. Her people saying late last night that they are incredulous that he could spend so much time in this guy's company and not have noticed a single thing out of step. Now, she, the interviewer, wants to get into why, when Jeffrey Epstein spent time in prison in 2010, and when he was released in July 2010, why in December 2010, knowing that this guy was a convicted sex offender, why did you go and spend time with him in New York? Here's the exchange.
He was released in July. Within months, by December of 2010, you went to stay with him at his New York mansion. Why? Why were you staying with a convicted sex offender?
Right. I have always, ever since this has happened, and since this has become, as it were, public knowledge that I was there, I've questioned myself as to why did I go, what was I doing, and was it the right thing to do? Now, I went there with the sole purpose of saying to him that because he had been convicted, it was inappropriate for us to be seen together. And I had a number of people counsel me in both directions, either to go and see him or not to go and see him. And I took the judgment call that because this was serious, and I felt that doing it over the telephone was the chicken's way of doing it, I had to go and see him and talk to him.
Now, this morning and late last evening, the presenter, Emily Maitlis, was widely praised for her conduct during the interview and for her forensic questioning. Now, at the risk of sounding like some bitter independent radio presenter or host who never made it to the big leagues, and by the way, I did make it to the big leagues, at the risk of sounding bitter and twisted, I'm not. Let me just say that at this particular point, and what you saw last night, Maitlis is Jewish, which is inconsequential to me, by the way. But you saw a lot of Jewish celebrities, people like David Baddiel and others, coming out on Twitter last night, screaming their praise for Emily Maitlis and the way she basically screwed this guy to the post and was all over him in her conduct and in her questioning. She wasn't. She wasn't. Here's a classic example of it, and there will be more as we go along. This guy says that he had to fly to New York City to tell this man, whom he has previously said was an important contact for him in terms of his own work, his own charity work, his own business work, but that he wasn't a friend. Now he's trying to persuade the watching audience that the best way to tell this guy that he didn't want to see him anymore was to go and do it face to face in New York, because to do it any other way would be to be a chicken. Now, a good interviewer, a rigorous interviewer, a robust interviewer at this stage would say to him, pull the other one. But she doesn't do that. At no time does she do that. Does she pull him back and say, pull the other one? The watching audience is going to have to take that with a large pinch of salt, that you felt it was necessary to go to New York to say to this guy, I don't think we should see each other anymore. A really good interviewer would have said, I would have said to him, there will be those who will believe or who will suggest that you waited a couple of months for things to calm down after he left prison, and then you went to New York to see him to try to find out how the land was lying, to get a sense of, you know, what did he say? Had he been interviewed? Was he asked about you personally? You know, Prince Andrew, maybe you went to New York because you wanted to find out, was he asked about you specifically when he was interviewed and when he was in prison? But she doesn't do any of that. And that's not good journalism. It's not good interviewing in any way, shape or form. Then the photograph in the park comes up, and the conversation that he had with Jeffrey Epstein in Central Park, because this is where Andrew alleges he had the breakup conversation.
I went to see him, and I was doing a number of other things in New York at the time, and we had an opportunity to go for a walk in the park, and that was the conversation, coincidentally, that was photographed, which was when I said to him, I said, look, because of what has happened, I don't think it is appropriate that we should remain in contact. And by mutual agreement during that walk in the park, we decided that we would part company, and I left, I think it was the next day.
And there's a whopper of a lie there, listening to this. And while it seems like Emily Maitlis picks up on it, she doesn't really. He's caught himself out in a massive lie here.
Next day.
Okay, you got to hear that again. They're in the park and he says, I don't think we should see each other anymore because you've been in prison for sex abuse of a minor. And Andrew says they mutually agreed that was the best course to take. And then he says...
The next day.
Why do I keep going back? Yeah, here we go.
I did that we would part company and I left, I think it was the next day.
I left the next day, he says. Keep it in mind.
And to this day, I never had any contact with him from that day forward.
What did he say when you told him that you were breaking up the friendship?
He was what I would describe as understanding. He didn't go into any great depth in the conversation about what I was doing, what he was doing, except to say that he'd accepted a, whatever it was, a plea bargain. He'd served his time, and he was carrying on with his life, you see what I mean? And I said, yes, but I'm afraid to say that's as may be. But with all the attendant scrutiny on me, then I don't think it is a wise thing to do.
Right. Okay. He said he left the next day, but he didn't really.
That was December of 2010.
Yep.
He threw a party to celebrate his release, and you were invited as the guest of honour.
Oh,
I didn't go, he said. And then he says, oh, this is in the same time period. This is in the same few days that he's in New York to see the guy to break up with him in Central Park. And this is where Maitlis is really poor.
In 2010, there certainly wasn't a party to celebrate his release in December. Because it was a small dinner party. There were only 8 or 10 of us, I think, at the dinner. If there was a party, then I'd know nothing about that.
You were invited to that dinner as a guest of honour?
Well, I was there, so there was a dinner. I don't think it was quite as you might put it, but yeah, okay, I was there for a dinner, yeah.
I'm just trying to...
There isn't anything funny about that. He's giggling there. She should pull him up on it, and she should also say to him, but you said you left the next day. You didn't leave the next day. Not only did you not leave the next day, but you hung around so that you could be present at a dinner party with 8 or 10 guests. By the way, Your Highness, I'd love to know who those guests were. You know, presumably Ghislaine Maxwell was there. Presumably Epstein was there. You might tell us who the other 5 or 6 guests were. But you told me you'd left the previous day. Excuse me, the following day. So you're lying to me. Why are you lying? Which is true?
This out.
That's what you should do, you see, as an interviewer. Got to be listening. And Maitlis didn't listen to what he was telling her. And there's a million reasons for that, but I'm not going to get into it today. Maitlis is a career climbing journalist. This is the biggest moment of Emily Maitlis's career, the biggest she'll ever have. She's not concentrating on what she's been told by him. He's told a monumental whopper of a lie. She doesn't pull him on it.
Because you said you went to break up the relationship, and yet you stayed at that New York mansion several days.
Right, now, again, this is why I said it might seem like Maitlis is pulling him up on it, but she doesn't pull him up on it. Not rigorously enough. She says, you said you went to break up with him, but you stayed a few days. What she should say is, why did you say you left the following day when you didn't? Because that is basically calling attention to a massive lie, but she doesn't do that.
And yet you stayed at that New York mansion several days. I'm wondering how long...
But I was doing a number of other things while I was there.
Yeah, but you said you left the day after you spoke to him at Central Park. This is big, you see. It's not a mistake on the part of the prince. It's a lie. It's a very, very easy lie to pick up on. And either she's that thick and is not really listening to what she's been told by him, or she doesn't really want to pull him up on it because she's on his turf. She's conducting the interview in Buckingham Palace. I'm not going to say whether I'm better or worse than Emily Maitlis, but I've been around a long time. I'm not letting that go. You said you spoke to him in Central Park, you mutually agreed that you couldn't be seen together anymore, and you told me you left the following day. Why did you say that? Because you stayed for several days afterwards. I'm not letting him away with that, you see. But she does. Doesn't sound like she does, but she does.
Staying at the house of a convicted sex offender.
It was a convenient place to stay. I've gone through this in my mind so many times. At the end of the day, with the benefit of all the hindsight that one can have, it was definitely the wrong thing to do. But at the time, I felt it was the honourable and right thing to do. And I admit fully that my judgment was probably coloured by my tendency to be too honourable.
My God.
That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is. My judgment was coloured by my tendency to be too honourable. Again, Maitlis proves how worthless an examiner she really is. Maitlis's next sentence should be, OK, let's say that I believe that you felt the honourable thing to do was to tell him face to face that you weren't going to be friends with him anymore. Let's say I accept that on face value. How could anybody be comfortable with staying for several days in a Manhattan penthouse of a convicted child abuser? Please explain that to me in the watching audience, because I don't get that. Let's accept that you were honourable by saying to him face to face, sorry, Jeffrey, you're a dirty bastard and I can't be seen with you. Okay, I'll accept that. I'll believe that. But you stuck around for a few days and you had dinner with him. How could you be comfortable having dinner with a convicted paedophile, Your Royal Highness, with the greatest respect? But Maitlis doesn't do that. This is the BBC. And it is no coincidence that while this was only 5 minutes old last night, all the BBC lovies, all of them, to a man and woman, were hailing and acclaiming Maitlis as brilliant forensic questioning of Prince Andrew, when there is nothing brilliant about it. Screw him to the fucking wall. He's just said, I stuck around for a few days. Why? It was convenient. The question to put to him is, but with the greatest respect, Your Royal Highness, most of us wouldn't want to be a million anywhere near a convicted child abuser. That would have been a very quick conversation, even if you had to do it face to face. Listen, pal, you're a dirty fucking child abuser. I wish I'd known that when I was hanging out with you. Don't call me ever again. Don't have anything to do with me. Take me out of your Rolodex and don't ever mention my name anywhere ever again. But you stuck around with him. Right, let's hear a little bit more of it. This is the sort of analysis, sadly, that you're not getting anywhere else in UK media today, even though it's obvious what was going on here. So what about girls coming to the flats and stuff like that? And, you know, there were allegations that you got a foot massage. Let's have a listen.
During that time, those few days, witnesses say they saw many young girls coming and going at the time. There is video footage of Epstein accompanied by young girls. And you were there staying in his house, catching up with friends.
There's no question there. She leaves it hanging in the air. I don't understand this. Again, this isn't good by Maitlis. The question is, very simply, you're there for days. We know that lots and lots of girls were there, coming and going. Don't tell me you didn't notice something, or don't tell me you didn't find it a little bit weird in light of the fact that he's a convicted sex offender. But she doesn't say that. She leaves it hanging in the air.
House, catching up with friends.
What the fuck, like?
Young girls. And you were there, staying in his house, catching up with friends.
Why the open-ended? Why the hanging?
I mean, if they were, then I wasn't a party to any of that. I never saw them. I mean, you have to understand that his house... I described it more as a almost as a railway station, if you know what I mean, in the sense that there were people coming in and out of that house all the time. What they were doing and why they were there, I had nothing to do with. So I'm afraid I can't make any comment on that because I really don't know.
Another guest was John Brockman, the literary agent. Now, he described
really?
Seeing you there getting a foot massage from a young Russian woman. Did that happen?
No.
Listen to this very carefully. When she mentions John Brockman's name, listen.
The literary agent. Now, he just...
I really don't know.
Listen.
Another guest was John Brockman, the literary agent. Now, he described seeing...
Really, he said. John Brockman, the literary agent, was there. Really? Right?
Okay. Seeing you there... getting a foot massage from a young Russian woman. Did that happen?
No.
You're absolutely sure, or
yeah,
you can't remember?
Absolutely sure.
So John Brockman's statement is false?
Well, I wouldn't, I don't know Mr. Brockman, so I don't know what he's talking about.
Mm. Really? And then I don't know Mr. Brockman. I don't know what he's talking about. Maybe there's something in that, maybe there isn't.
But that definitely wasn't you getting a foot massage from a Russian girl in Jeffrey Epstein's house.
No.
No, he says, quite clearly no. He was there for a few days after he broke up with Epstein. Remember, he's told a major lie. And he's trapped himself in a major lie. He said he spoke with Epstein in the park, said, that's it, we're finished. I left the following day, but he didn't. He didn't. He stayed for several days and he was the guest of honour at a dinner party which was celebrating Epstein's release. Bizarrely. Bizarrely, considering that Epstein had been released several months prior to that. All very strange. Right, so then it comes to the part where she asks him about, do you regret meeting Epstein and befriending him?
Do you regret the whole friendship with Epstein?
Still not, and the reason being is that the people that I met and the opportunities that I was given to learn either by him or because of him were actually very useful. He himself, not as it were as close as you might think. We weren't that close, so therefore, I mean,
at this stage it's dreadful that Maitlis doesn't jump in, This is the second time in the interview. I've cut the interview into pieces. This is the second time that he said that he wasn't really close with Epstein. She should jump in and say, well, if you fly halfway around the world, okay, it's not halfway around the world. If you fly across the Atlantic to say we're breaking up, you must be close to him. But she doesn't do that. She could say, hang on a second, you're saying you weren't that close, but you stayed in his house on multiple occasions. You flew on his plane on numerous occasions. You stayed on his island on numerous occasions. Respectfully, Prince Andrew, you can't sit here and expect the watching public to take that seriously. That's her fucking job. It's easy. It's not difficult. You don't have to be rude to him. Hang on a second, man. You're having dinner parties with him. You're basically travelling several times a year to be with this guy, and you want us to believe that you weren't that close. Come on! But she doesn't.
I mean, yes, I would go and stay in his house, but that was because of his girlfriend, not because of him.
So why didn't you phone the girlfriend then, Ghislaine Maxwell, and say, listen, tell your man, Jeffrey, that we can't do business anymore and I can't be coming to stay on the island and I can't be using his plane. You see, these are follow-up questions that Maitlis should undertake, but she doesn't because she is worthless as a presenter and as a journalist. Absolutely crap. And yet, if you pick up a newspaper in the UK this morning, whether it's the Sunday Times, whether it's the Sunday Telegraph, she is being heralded as some sort of kind of post-Paxman wonderful example of journalistic integrity. She's brilliant, according to the UK media. No, she isn't. It's fucking rubbish. It's garbage. Garbage! In my days in commercial and national media, I'd have been absolutely hammered for my conduct in that interview. You know, the stock phrase is, why did you go so easy on him, Richie? That's the standard. From your peers, my fellow presenters would have been saying, Jesus, you gave him an easy ride. Could have jumped in several times there. It's rubbish. It's rubbish, this. Just before she asks him about Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, we'll take a wee pause. After the wee pause, I'll read your comments and then we'll hear more of what has been called the interview of the century so far. Prince Andrew, the Queen's son, with the BBC Newsnight programme. Back in about 60 seconds.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, lots of tweets on this. Pretty much the same. When I say pretty much the same, there's a theme running through the tweets. None of you are buying what you've been hearing. Tom says, good morning, Richie. Never mind car crash. This is a train wreck of an interview. You didn't exactly need to be Einstein to tell that some of the things he said was monumental horse shit, says Tom. Thank you, Tom. Hi to La Antenna. Hi to Susan at Ruby Dragon 1. How you doing, Susan? Appreciate that. Hi to Alan Badger. How you doing, Alan? Good morning. Hi to William, who's pretty suspicious listening to that. Hi to Ricky, who says, why didn't Prince Andrew come forward and give full disclosure? He says, Ricky does, because he's up to his neck in it. Yeah. And Marie tweeted to me, that's Marie in Cork, retweeted a tweet by somebody called Ian Hyland, And the allegation by Hyland is that there was only 1.7 million people watching the BBC Two interview with Andrew yesterday evening. If that's true, that is small. You would have imagined that it would have had a much bigger audience share, wouldn't you, with the publicity leading into it, because the media on Friday, all day Friday, because it was recorded on Friday, was full of previews of it. So if it was only 1.7 million, that is very interesting, that. David Stanford says, well, it would be no different than Christmas luncheon with Uncle Jimmy, says David. Thanks for that, David, there. Right, so we come to the part then where they talk about Virginia Roberts Giuffre and her allegations about Prince Andrew, the allegations levelled by her at Andrew, and the photograph. Let's have a listen. Yeah. Okay, here we go.
July of this year, Epstein was arrested on charges of sex trafficking and abusing dozens of underage girls. Mm-hmm. One of Epstein's accusers, Virginia Roberts, has made allegations against you. She says she met you in 2001. She says she dined with you, danced with you at Tramp nightclub in London. She went on to have sex with you in a house in Belgravia belonging to Ghislaine Maxwell, your friend. Your response?
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady. None whatsoever.
You don't remember meeting her?
No.
She says she met you in 2001. She dined with you. She danced with you. Mm-hmm. You bought her drinks. Mm-hmm. You were in Tramp nightclub in London. Mm-hmm. And she went on to have sex with you in a house in Belgravia belonging to Ghislaine Maxwell.
Didn't happen.
Do you remember her?
No. I have no recollection of ever meeting her. I'm convinced that I was never in Tramps with her. There are a number of things that are wrong with that story. One of which is that I don't know where the bar is in Tramps. I don't drink. I don't think I've ever bought a drink in Tramp whenever I was there.
Do you remember dancing at Tramp?
No. That couldn't have happened because the date that is being suggested, I was at home with the children.
He's got an amazing memory. He says the date that he is alleged to have danced with Virginia Roberts Giuffre at Tramp nightclub in London, on that date he was doing something else. Now, let's be completely honest here. Car crash, though this is, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that this guy, of all people, would have pretty easy access to any given day in the last 30 or 40 years, because I'm sure that very detailed diaries are kept regarding the movements of people like him. His security detail, of course, alone would know where he is 24/7. I'm not saying I believe him now, but some of you are saying, how could he remember exactly what he was doing when he was supposed to be in the nightclub with Giuffre? To be fair, he's a member of the royal family. Every day is accounted for and is chronicled. Definitely chronicled. Not saying I believe him, because he's lied profusely throughout the conversation with Maitlis thus far. So I would take anything he says with a pinch of salt. But where he says he was, well, jaws dropped all over the independent media. Where was he when he was supposed to be with Giuffre?
You know that you were at home with the children. Mm. Was it a memorable night?
On that particular day that we now understand is the date, which is the 10th of March, I was at home. I was with the children. I'd taken Beatrice to a Pizza Express in Woking for a party at, sort of 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And then because the Duchess was away, we have a simple rule in the family that when one's away, the other one's there. I was on terminal leave at the time from the Royal Navy, so therefore I was at home.
Why would you remember that so specifically? Why would you remember a Pizza Express birthday and being at home?
Because going to Pizza Express in Woking is an unusual thing for me to do.
Yeah. Look, I'm not going to labour the point about the Podesta emails and Pizzagate and all the rest of it. It's all over the internet this morning. Bizarre. Bizarre because he, again, it's a contradiction of sorts. He took the girls to Pizza Express in the afternoon. He didn't take them in the evening. He was freed and he was free in the evening to go out or to do something else. And Maitlis doesn't pick him up on this again. It's very, very poor by the very well-paid BBC presenter. Okay? Because you prepare rigorously for these kinds of interviews. You don't get them very often. And in the case of this one last night, it's once in a lifetime. You know, you'd say to him, but you could have went in the night time. That's all she has to say. Pizza Express, yeah. All right, but that was in the afternoon. You could have met her in the night time. Anyway, what else about this alleged meeting with Jeffrey at Tramps nightclub?
She was very specific about that night. Mm. She described dancing with you and you profusely sweating.
The sweating thing.
And that she went on to have bath, possibly.
There's a slight problem with the sweating because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat or I didn't sweat at the time.
I don't sweat or I didn't sweat at the time. Again, this is fascinating, this. Again, here he claims it couldn't have been me because I don't sweat. I have a particular medical condition, or at least I did at the time. I mean, this is gargantuan bullshit, this, right?
Medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, or I didn't sweat at the time. And that was... Oh, actually, yes. I didn't sweat at the time because I had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at. And I simply, it was almost impossible for me to sweat.
Now, there's about 500 photographs online of him in his 30s and in his early 40s, sweating like a virgin on prom night, to be honest. I know that's a crass analogy. I know. There's about a dozen new ones going up every hour of this guy with sweat pissing down his face at any number of nightclubs and parties because this guy is a bit of a playboy. Okay, but he has a condition, or at least he did it at the time where he didn't sweat.
And it's only because I have done a number of things in the recent past that I'm starting to be able to do that again. So I'm afraid to say that there's a medical condition that says that I didn't
what
do
the
it
fuck?
In the recent past
what?
To sweat. And it's only because I have done a number of things in the recent past.
Who the fuck speaks like that? And again, she could pick him up on this all through the interview. She could say, with respect, without coming off badly. She could say, without coming off like a bully. She could say, listen, it sounds very much like you're constantly searching for answers. There's no natural flow to your answers. It sounds like you're being very, very careful. With respect to you, Prince Andrew, you don't sound like you're being very honest. You're very hesitant. You've got a very kind of stuttering delivery here. You're not being very definitive in the answers you're giving me. You're hedging your bets a bit. She could say, but she doesn't. And if ever an interviewee deserved to be destroyed for a single answer, this was it, and she lets him away with it.
A number of things to sweat. And it's only because I have done a number of things in the recent past that I'm starting to be able to do that again. So I'm afraid to say that there's a medical condition that says that I didn't do it, so therefore...
Oh.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I've never in my life heard anything as ridiculous as that. And I've been around a long time. You've got to hear that again.
It was almost impossible for me to sweat. And it's only because I...
It's only because what? It's only because what?
I have done a number of things in the recent past that I'm starting to be able to do that again. So,
do that again, you mean sweat. It's only because you've done a number of things in the recent past that means that you're now able to sweat. Horse shit, right? And I'm inclined to believe, as bad as Maitlis is, if she was interviewing any other man or woman, apart from a member of the royal family, she would have drilled down into that answer and basically summarised the answer. See, it's your job as a presenter to summarise the answer. So you should go as the presenter. This is good if you're a budding radio presenter, if you're a young person going into university, listen to me. Trust me, I'm a doctor. I'm an expert. This is what I do. It's your job to summarise his answer by way of your next question. Hang on a second there. You said Falklands, some sort of incident in the Falklands, adrenaline. You had an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands because you were coming under fire. That overdose of adrenaline meant that for an unspecified period, you were unable to sweat. And it was at that time, during the time you were alleged to have danced with Virginia Giuffre, you were unable to sweat, but you've done some things in the recent past that mean you're able to sweat again. Respectfully, Your Royal Highness, what the ever motherfucking fuck? Really? No. Maitlis doesn't say anything. And moves on. Not even what were the steps that you took in the not so recent past or in the recent past. What did you do, Andrew? Did you have an operation, did you? Did you have an operation? Because there would be a record of that. You see where I'm going with this? Did you have a procedure, Andrew? No. Emily Maitlis, acclaimed and lauded almost unanimously in the UK media today for her brilliance last night, falls asleep on her watch. Challenges nothing. Did you meet her?
Do you know you didn't meet her, or do you just not remember meeting her?
No, I have. I don't know if I've met her, but no, I have no recollection of meeting her.
Right. So the photograph then. Well, it's important to hear that again.
Do you know you didn't meet her, or do you just not remember meeting her?
I have. I don't know if I've met her, but
I don't know if I've met her. He is terrified that there is evidence in the public domain, not yet in the public domain. He is terrified that there are photographs. He is terrified that photographs are in existence that will completely destroy him. So he cannot say, listen, I never met her, Emily. How many times do I have to say it? I never met this woman. Can't say that. There is one photograph that they're going to talk about now in a second. But he doesn't know about the existence of any others. So he refuses to categorically deny meeting her.
She provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't. Because I don't, I have no, I, again, I have absolutely no memory of that photograph ever being taken.
Do you recognise?
By the way, people only get amnesia in the movies and in shit 1980s cop shows like TJ Hooker. People don't get amnesia on that scale. This is a very pretty young woman. Exceptionally pretty she was back then. She's a pretty woman today. You don't fucking forget whether you met her or not. I remember every pretty woman I've ever met in my life. I'm 44 years of age. Right? Every exceptionally pretty girl that I went, she's a bit of all right. I remember them all. They rejected me, every one of them. No, but you remember them. And you would remember posing for a photograph with this girl in this apartment. Of course you would, right?
Do you recognise yourself in the photo?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult not to recognise yourself.
Your friend suggested that the photo is fake.
He's on very fucking shaky ground here now. Because in the last couple of weeks, some of his pals have given interviews to the national press and they have suggested that the photograph is fake. They've offered no evidence whatsoever, by the way, apart from, you know, well, it looks like the fingers and a bit chubby and all this bullshit. No evidence, because the picture isn't fake. So he's on very shaky ground here. Can he say, yes, I believe the picture is fake? Can he?
I think it's from the investigations that we've done, you can't prove whether or not that photograph is faked or not, because it is a photograph of a photograph of a photograph. So it's very difficult to be able to
And you would kill for the original right now, wouldn't you, Andrew? You would give your left arm for the original photograph, wouldn't you?
To prove it. But I don't remember that photograph ever being taken.
But it's possible that it was you with your arm around.
That's me, but whether that's my...
That is him.
...hand or whether that's the position, but I don't... I have simply no recollection of a photograph ever being taken.
And again, you know, Maitlis is entitled. I do talk a lot. Sometimes I do get a bit... you know what I'm like. I do sometimes come on a bit strong about this stuff. But look, let me give you the academic approach. At this stage, Maitlis is entitled to say, pull the other one, you know. You can't expect us, me, and I'm representing the audience, by the way. I'm the audience's mouth, eyes and ears here. That's my job. It's my job here at the Richie Allen Show. I am your mouth, your eyes and your ears during the 2 hours every day. I've got to ask questions of people that you want asked. You know, I shouldn't finish an interview and you should be saying, ah, Jesus, he should have said this or he should have asked that. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm sure it does sometimes. Of course it does. But it shouldn't happen very often. You know, if you're any good, you should go, oh, fair play, Richie, I wanted to ask that. Right? She's well within her rights to say to him, mate, nobody's buying this, that you have no recollection of the picture being taken. Nobody. But she doesn't do that. She just sits there.
The world has now seen the photo that Virginia Roberts provided, taken by Epstein, we understand, in Ghislaine Maxwell's house.
Well, here's the problem. I've never...
Wait for this. This is very important now. Talk about getting caught in a lie. This is massive lie number two by him. And again, she fails to execute her duty as the public's representative. He says now. Listen, I tell you what, listen, and then we'll go back to
house.
Well, here's the problem. I've never seen Epstein with a camera in my life.
I think it was Virginia Roberts' camera. She said a little Kodak one that she lent to Epstein. He took a photo, and your arm is round her waist.
I don't remember that photograph ever being taken. I don't remember going upstairs in the house, because that photograph is taken upstairs. And I'm not entirely convinced that... I mean, that is what I would describe as me in that picture. But we can't be certain as to whether or not that's my hand on her, whatever it is, left side.
You think that...
Because I have no recollection of that photograph ever being taken.
So why would somebody have put in another hand? You think it is you next to her in the photo?
Oh, it's definitely me. I mean, that's a picture of me. It's not a picture of... I don't believe it's a picture of me in London, because when I go out in London, I wear a suit and a tie.
Yeah, I wear a suit and a tie. He said he's on the record as saying that he was never upstairs in Epstein's house, that he was never upstairs. He's on the record as having said this previously. And Maitlis would know this, or her producers would know it. So when he says of the picture, well, that photograph looks like it's taken upstairs and I've not been upstairs, Maitlis should have jumped all over it and said to him, how do you know that the photograph was taken in the upstairs of the residence when you've previously said you never went upstairs? How do you know that it's upstairs specifically? Major lie by the Duke of York, and another massive failure by the BBC presenter. She doesn't say to him, you were on the record as saying you were never upstairs. How do you know? What about having sex with girls trafficked by Epstein? Could you have had sex with girls trafficked by Epstein, perchance?
For the record, is there any way you could have had sex with that young woman or any young woman trafficked by Jeffrey Epstein in any of his residences?
No. And without putting too fine a point on it...
Wait for this.
If you're a man, it is a positive act to have sex with somebody.
Fucking hell.
You have to take some sort of positive action. And so therefore, if you try to forget, it's very difficult to try and forget.
What in the name of Christ is this? Yes, having sex is brilliant. Fucking hell, she should jump in there, mateless, and say, what are you saying? That having sex is great, we all know that. If you have sex with somebody, it's because you're sexually aroused. Consensual sex. And it's fun. What are you telling me? That you remember everybody you've had sex with? Okay. Right. But there's an important opportunity, again, missed by Emily Maitlis. Because she's asking about traffic girls.
Positive action. And I do not remember anything. I've racked my brain and thinking, oh, well, when the allegations came out originally, I went, well, that's a bit strange. I don't remember this. And then I've been through it and through it and through it over and over and over again. And no, nothing.
Shocking. Shocking, this. I have no recollection. Listen to the question again.
For the record, is there any way you could have had sex with that young woman or any young woman trafficked by Jeffrey Epstein in any of his residences?
In any of his residences. And he says sex is a positive act and you can't forget it and I have no recollection. Now, for £500, what is the follow-up question? After he rattles on about how no recollection and it's a positive thing, what is the follow-up question? What is the follow-up question? Come on! It's fucking obvious! She should have said next, did you ever have sex at any time that you were with Jeffrey Epstein? That's the follow-up question, surely. All right, we talked about trafficked girls. Did you ever have consensual sex at any of Jeffrey Epstein's residences, did you? And she doesn't ask him. What a monumental failure that is. What an opportunity. But she fails. She gets into her next question is all about Virginia Roberts Giuffre and her legal team and their incredulity that Andrew didn't notice the young girls in all of his time with Jeffrey Epstein. But she missed a massive trick there in not asking him, well, did you have sex with anybody? But she doesn't.
You said in your statement...
Because she's a fucking failure. It's as simple as that.
From the palace. Yep. At no time did I see, witness or suspect any suspicious behaviour.
Yep. Yep.
Virginia Roberts' legal team says you could not spend time around Epstein and not know what was going on. You could not spend time around Epstein.
Certainly not as much time as this guy spent with Epstein. It's not like he spent a weekend at the Hamptons once every year. The guy was spending time with him 5-6 times a year across different properties, flying with the guy. So it's a good point.
...around Epstein and not know what was going on.
If you are somebody like me, then people behave in a subtly different way. First of all, I'm not looking for it. That's the thing. You see, if you're looking for it, then you might have suspected now, with the benefit of a huge amount of hindsight and a huge amount of analysis, you look back and you go, well, was that really the way that it was?
This is rubbish, this.
It was, or was I looking at it the wrong way? But you don't go into these places, you don't go to stay with people looking for that.
You could not spend time around him. That was what they said. You could not spend time around him and not know.
Look, the other aspect of this is that I live in an institution at Buckingham Palace which has members of staff walking around all the time. And I don't wish to appear grand, but there were a lot of people who were walking around Jeffrey Epstein's house. As far as I was aware, they were staff, They were people that were working for him, or doing things. I, as it were, I interacted with them, if you want to say good morning, good afternoon.
Lots of people wandering around Jeffrey Epstein's residences, but because I'm a bit of a snob, which is what he's trying to say, he is deliberately trying to say that. He's trying to give the impression, Buckingham Palace, loads of people running around, I paid them no attention, well, because they are pond scum. They are commoners, you know. So, yeah, there might have been young people running around, but I don't pay any attention, is what he's basically trying to allege.
But I didn't, if you see what I mean, interact with them in a
yeah,
way.
Yeah, enough of that. She brings up the suicide then.
Epstein was found dead.
Yep.
In prison.
Yes.
In August of this year.
Yep.
What was your response on hearing that he'd died?
Shock.
Some people think that he didn't take his own life.
Well, there again, I'm not one to be able to answer that question.
What the fuck is that?
Well, there again, I'm not one to be able to answer that question.
What? What?
Well, there again, I'm not one to be able to answer that question.
Yeah, because it's really funny, isn't it? Epstein is found dead in his prison cell there, Prince Andrew. Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. Lovely hurling, as we say in Ireland. Lovely hurling. What in the name of God was that response by him? And she doesn't pick up on it. She is entitled to say it to him.
Died.
Shock.
What's funny
Some
about that?
Some think that he didn't take his own life.
Well, there again, I'm not one to be able to answer that question.
What the fuck is that? I've racked my brains overnight. I thought about this through the night. What would induce you to laugh there? Nervousness? Bit of nerves there? Yeah, yeah. I kind of thought he might be suicided there, Emily. Or does he just find it funny?
I believe that centres around something to do with a bone in his neck. As to whether or not, if you commit suicide, that bone breaks or something. But I'm afraid to say I'm not an expert. I have to take what the coroner says, and he has ruled that it was suicide.
So therefore it must be suicide. Finally then, he kind of gives himself away again at the end. Jeffrey Epstein was not only at the time of his death a convicted child abuser, but at the time of his death it was known widely that he had trafficked and sexually abused and provided minors for a wide variety of people. The guy was a monster, right? It was known at the time of his death that he was a monster. And then, as they wrap up this so-called interview, you get this.
Do I regret the fact that he has quite obviously conducted himself in a manner unbecoming? Yes.
Unbecoming. He was a sex offender.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm being polite. And in the sense that he was a sex offender.
Unbecoming, yeah. Unbecoming. Conduct unbecoming is me coming on the radio show 6 weeks ago drunk to do Sunday View. The only time I've ever done that in a career of 25 years. Not my proudest moment, even though I didn't behave very badly on the morning. I was inebriated. It was conduct unbecoming of a professional. Jeffrey Epstein was a fucking child rapist. But according to him, it's conduct unbecoming. Conduct unbecoming is a phrase tantamount to, well, he got caught. His biggest mistake was that he got caught. That's it for Sunday View. What else can you say about that? A wretched exercise that. He was dreadful in it. He was obviously lying through his teeth. You don't have to be a body language expert to understand that. His eye movements when he was answering questions. His the movement of his hands. The delivery. The very kind of stuttering, kind of halting delivery he was given. The guy is lying through his teeth, and at least on two occasions in the interview he was caught telling fairly serious lies. And the conduct and the professionalism of the BBC, again, lets down the paying public, because of course people have to pay to watch the BBC, £140 a year. For Emily Maitlis to sit there and to be asleep on the watch, basically not pulling him up on the bullshit answers he's given and not calling out the downright lies. Like, I told him I didn't want to see him anymore and then I left the following day, when indeed he didn't leave the following day. Listen, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. on YouTube for the Richie Allen... What's it called? The YouTube live stream newspaper review thing. That's the one. So have a great Sunday. Until then, it's bye from me. Look after yourselves and one another. Closing out the programme today with Radiohead, High and Dry. Bye.